Hey, Alex.
Elliot, mate. How's it going?
Good, good. Now, this is one of our Pulse episodes. It's all about news and developments in legal tech, legal ops. I've got to say, Alex, at the start, in being the consummate professional I am, I have a dog next to me while I'm recording. So, you know, just for listening.
Yeah, tell us about it. Doggo, what's Doggo's name? What's Doggo's breed? Visualize it for us.
Coco, Groodle, what is that? Golden Retriever, Poodle. Yep. Extremely cute.
It's course. Very Melbourne of you. Very like city Melbourne of you.
Thanks, I think. has a tendency to bark at any sounds coming from outside. So that will be, you know, interesting. The perfect podcast recording companion,
I
think.
Yeah, that's great. I need to get one as well.
Definitely. Bit of news today, but before we get into it, can we talk about MacBook Pros or have we done that too much?
No, I think we should. And I think they're a bit chunky. That's just my opinion. Originally I said I was going to get one. It's good. And you know, I even said that it's probably going to be overpowered for what I was going to do, but it was going to come down to the aesthetics, which usually it does come down to that for a lot of Apple products for me. Went into the Apple store, sussed it out. It's very thick.
Okay. So
very thick.
So it's all about vanity. For you.
Well, look, I think, you know, all of the other ones like MacBook Airs, the MacBook, and even, you know, that MacBook Pro I'm recording on right now, like it's all very sleek, it's very smooth, it's very thin. And now it's, I don't know, it's very chunky. It's gone, it's almost gone back to like the 2013 Mac. You know how it was kind of round and kind of thick, like a bit of a brick?
Yep.
It's kind of like that, except bigger than that. Definitely heavier. And look, it's, you know, it's a professional machine. It's going to do a lot of things for a lot of people, but I don't know. It's just not for me. And plus, I don't want to fork out however much it is for something that doesn't look, in my opinion, amazing.
Maybe you're just not pro enough. yeah, so
I knew that before I was going to get a Mac.
So I was watching the Verge has a really great review, as they always do. And the one thing that stuck out for me was that they tested the the M1X, which I think they all are, the M1X 16-inch Pro model, so the one with the lesser GPU, and they got 16 hours out of the battery, which is just absolutely ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. That is just incredible battery life, and that I find very appealing because I think I've mentioned before I'm lucky to get about 3 or 4 hours out of my current one, which is getting pretty old now. So that is very appealing, but on the flip side, spending $4,000 less appealing. So watch this space. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it if you get one.
Yeah. Oh definitely. all right. So first thing, another legal tech directory.
Yes. Yeah. I'll kick us in. So we've talked about a lot of different legal tech specifically directories on this podcast. Probably at least 4 or 5, I would say, has made a mention, but I know there's definitely more. And through my research, I came across another tech directory. This one's from thelegaloperators.com. And just like a lot of the other directories, it aims to be a place that people can go to understand what kind of technology is out there. It has a pretty cool search functionality. You can categorize based on certain things like the type of tech and the type of vendor and those kind of things. But when I kind of saw this, I saw kind of the irony in having a directory or another directory. And that was, we have so many directories now that we almost need a directory for the directories to be able to see which one has which tech, which one's the best, which one offers certain things. So I think, you know, all of these directories and, you know, these websites have the right intention, I think, which is to have a place that people can go to, like I said, find the news, find the technology they're looking for and those kind of things. But when there's so many directories and each of those directories have different types of information on it, it just becomes a little hard. So maybe they've gone out to solve an issue, but have almost contributed to the same issue. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm being overcritical. What do you think?
No. Well, I think you know, the reality is that they're probably all. Firstly, I think they probably all have a slightly different sort of angle to them.
Yep.
But secondly, you know, ideally you want to try to become the one true directory, right? The one to rule them all. And if you can become that, then you know, all power to you. That's great. I mean, my impression of this one. So. As you said, Legal Operators, Legal Tech Directory, it's quite nicely designed and seems pretty easy to navigate. It looks to me like, you know, comparing to some others, it looks to me like this one I think you have to be a subscriber to legal operators. You have to be like a kind of a vendor subscriber to legal operators to be listed. And so I suppose the idea is you know, you sort of encouraged to become a subscriber or a member. You pay a membership fee, and that gives you the ability to have your, you know, your sort of product listed there, and hopefully then the corporates and law firms who are on the platform as well will see you and, you know, want to use your product, right? So it's a sales channel, in other words. Compare that to at least one or two of the others I'm aware of where they're trying to be a directory of all legal tech, and you can get listed there even if you don't pay them anything. And the business model there is that you can pay for a sort of a premium listing, right? So all you'll get if you're not paying is some very basic listing. And then if you want to have something more fancy that's actually appealing to potential customers, then you can pay, right? And so, you know, I think those are very different business models, and I could potentially see them both working. I suppose the one that's more general, the one that lists everything, if that one actually works and becomes a sort of a canonical list of legal tech, if that's even possible, then you'd think that would subsume the other one, right? Like if everyone's going to that one, then why would you go to another one? So yeah, good on them. Good on them for trying.
I suppose that's my main point. I mean, I'm kind of thinking about what I said before. Like, I think I was overcritical, but I don't think it's doing necessarily bad, because I think more information in the space is going to help people. But I just think, you know, it gets to a point where everyone's kind of competing against each other, and the market's so small that I think we should be working together, at least initially, to help build this network for everybody. But that's just my opinion. The other point is around, how biased are some of these directories, and, you know, how clear are they about that, those biases? And I mean, an example is you go to this website and you see a range of technology that might relate to, say, contract management, and you might see five that are, you know, got a star on it or are kind of at the top of the list. You might think, oh, look, these are the best kind of technologies, where in actual fact, those technologies have paid for a premium listing. And, you know, if that's obvious to the client, or to the person viewing it, then that's absolutely fine. But if it's not obvious, I just think it might be, you know, I don't know, a bit crappy at best and misleading at worst. And, you know, we look at all of these other platforms, and I think the ones that will take the approach of putting all the information up, making everyone kind of on the same level playing ground, then, you know, how do they make money to make sure that that kind of technology, as in the website technology, is the best and those kind of things. So it's an interesting model. I just think that when you're looking at this as a purchaser of legal technology, just have in your mind that perhaps, you know, the website might have some bias, and, you know, maybe what they're putting at the top of the list isn't necessarily the best.
So how many directories need to exist, Alex, before you and I create the directory of directories?
LegalOps.com? LegalOps.com? What is that? LegalOps.fm/directory for directories.
Yeah, please get our own URL right. But yes, LegalOps.fm/directory of directories. Now we've got to create that URL.
We will. Okay.
All right. Shall we move on to Nuix?
Yes, interesting one. I'll let you talk about some of the facts.
Sure.
But I saw this kind of come through, and I've kind of been watching Nuix for the past, well, since December last year when they IPO'd, and kind of watching all the things going on in their company, lots of stuff, which you'll talk about in a second, but, you know, their CFO, CEO leaving, they got investigated by the AFP, and now there's a class action against them. So why don't you tell us about it?
AFP, Australian Federal Police.
Yes. Australian Federal Police, yeah. That's like the FBI, right, for the US?
So Nuix, firstly, what are they? So my understanding of Nuix, and this is, I'm sure this is highly sort of incomplete, but I think it sort of encapsulates a core part of their business. So I believe they have a platform which does a few things. It helps to, if you give it a big data set, particularly for sort of discovery purposes, their platform can help to clean up messy data. So in particular, kind of finding and removing duplication. You know, if you give it a bunch of emails, for example, often you'll have a long chain with many emails repeated in a chain of emails, as well as appearing individually in a big data set. So they can remove all that duplication. And they can also likewise help to sort of find relationships between different data elements so that you can easily navigate across, you know, a large data set. And I think it's often used to tidy up, you know, big data sets before they're loaded into an e-discovery platform. And, you know, the one that sort of comes to mind there is Relativity. And, you know, I think, I mean, just a high level comment is that, I mean, this is a big market. You know, I mean, I think from memory, Relativity is one of the biggest sort of players in legal tech. And, you know, it sort of seems to me that if you've got a tool like this, which is working well, and if you've got a well-managed business, then I would have thought you should be doing quite well. But yeah, interesting stuff going on with Nuix. So as you say, they IPO'd last December, so December 2020, raised almost $1 billion, I think it is. And I think the valuation was almost $2 billion. And then since then, they've had a number of profit downgrades and their share price has dropped significantly, like sort of by about 40%, I think. And then just recently, a law firm, so Nuix is an Australian company, and a law firm here in Australia called Shine Lawyers have instigated a class action. And so the class action essentially alleges that the IPO documents were misleading, they overstated financial forecasts and understated risks, and that people bought shares, you know, on the basis of that information, lost money, and so, you know, they've suffered loss as a result of misleading statements. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think in context, you know, this is just sort of the end of a really bad run for Nuix. So, you know, they IPO'd in December, as we said. In May, they terminated a consulting agreement with one of their co-founders after he was investigated by the Australian Securities Commission for breaching our Corporations Act. In June, their CEO and CFO resigned, I think in the space of a week or so. And then in August, as we just mentioned, they reported a massive sinking of their profits and a $1.6 million loss for the financial year. So yeah, not a great year for Nuix.
Exactly. It's just it's an interesting case to follow. We'll continue to follow it because, you know, there is only really a small handful of legal tech companies that have IPO'd in the last, 5 years or so. And there's been even a smaller amount that have got that unicorn status, you know. So this is one of those. They're an Australian legal tech company, which is, you know, great for the Australian economy as well as the Australian tech industry. But then all this stuff is kind of happening at the same time. So look, you know, we'll see what shakes out. But yeah, just interesting to think about and interesting to talk about.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, legal tech investment. What's been happening? Has anything been happening?
It's been real quiet. I mean, as we kind of projected, and I think a lot of people projected last year, the investment that's going to happen in this year, so 2021, in legal technology was just going to be crazier than ever before. And we've definitely seen that. And we've even seen that just in the last kind of 2 months. So there's been close to $1 billion worth of investment in the legal technology in the last, like I said, around 2 months. And I'm just going to quick fire some and then we'll talk about some more in detail. So Paradigm, which is a practice management software predominantly focusing on the law firms, raised $400 million. Ontra, which we'll talk about in more detail, raised $200 million and they focus on contracts. Contract Pod AI, which in the name focuses on contracts, raised $170 million. Rossium, I think that's how you pronounce it, which also do contracts, raised $104 million. Smokeball raised $30 million. Pursuit, which some people in Australia would know, is a bit of a marketplace tool, raised $20 million. And then Zuva, which is a contracts tool, raised $15.7 million. So a few things there. One, huge investment in the last couple of months. Two, you know, a very large a proportion of that list is contracts, as we've been talking about through this entire year. You know, the adoption of contract management is a bit laggy, but it is definitely picking up. But you can see this massive investment in the contracts. So I think we'll see the adoption of more sophisticated contracts tools probably in the next like 2 or 3 years once these companies use this money and invest it to build new technology and other things. And also the other thing to mention is that these tech companies are kind of spread throughout the world now. So you're starting to see obviously your main areas like the US and the UK, but you've got Australia, India was in there as well. So, you know, you're starting to see tech really pop up in a lot of different areas. So just really cool to see. It's a pretty big number. I don't know what the number is for this year. We'll have to come back to that of the total investment into legal tech, but it's definitely more than last year. And I wonder when the bubble's going to pop. Is it only going to get bigger next year and then bigger the next year and bigger the next year? Or I don't know. I'll have to think about what the prediction looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I can't do the maths in my head, but I think even just there, even just with that list, you've reeled off must be it must be close to a billion, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, yep. And what's that, 2 months? Yeah. So I'm not sure what we're at for the year, but it's going to be well over a billion, multiple billions, I imagine. Should we talk about a couple of them? Mm. You mentioned, both of the ones I think we're going to talk about relate to contracting. Mm-hmm. So I think probably the first one is Ontra, which has recently, it's a rebranding. So previously it was called InCloud Council. So you already mentioned it, but they've raised $200 million. So interestingly, my understanding of what they do is that they've got a series of tools, sort of AI-based, natural language processing-based, to deal with contracts and to help to sort of automate the review process for contracts and help to direct your highly expensive lawyers to the parts of the contract where they need to focus, where automation won't do the full job. And then coupled with that, they've also got a marketplace of lawyers, of contracting lawyers, who you can engage to do that manual review where it's required. So to me, that's a really interesting business model, actually, because you're coupling this sort of AI-based tool and this automation-based tool with the actual humans that need to sort of plug the gaps in between. And then also building that that marketplace of human resource ready to go is not something that's easy to replicate. So it seems to me that that's, if you can get to that point, that's quite a good place to be. So I think that's an interesting business. And as we said, $200 million raised, and they've said that the money will be used to focus on contract automation and intelligence. This was a Series B funding round led by Blackstone. And I think you had an interesting point about Blackstone, didn't you?
Yeah. So actually, before I jump onto that, it's funny when we try to research what the investment's going to be used for, and they always provide a very generic statement like we're going to invest into contract automation and intelligence. But I think it is really, for this particular company, for the reasons that you just explained, I think it's just only going to get more intelligent. So this is definitely a company to watch. But yeah, so the Series B round was led by Blackstone Growth, who started off as a customer for those guys. Mm. So they were a customer, obviously using their technology, and they decided to invest. And I just think it's just really cool and a good news story to show that, a user of a technology not only loved their technology, but then invested in their technology. And the other question I have is, did these guys in Cloud Council or now Ontra strategically plan this? Did they try sell to Blackstone Growth because they knew they were going to have a great experience and then ultimately invest into them? I don't know. Interesting. Mm. If you're listening, feel free to come on the podcast. Shoot us a message. Talk about it.
If you're going to do that, if you're going to target a potential future investor as a customer, you better be comfortable that they're going to love your software, right?
So. Just fake it till you make it, Elliot. Gosh.
That's right. Go on.
I was going to say one more. Yeah, one more we want to talk about, which is this legal tech fund, which sounds really interesting. So there's a few aspects to this we'll have to try pull apart, and there's a few gaps that I think you and I can talk about. But firstly, DocuSign launched their ventures fund to target specifically on the legal sector. But at the same time, they also created a strategic partnership with a VC group called the Legal Tech Fund. Mm. Now, originally when I was reading this article, I thought they were kind of the same thing, but they're actually not. So DocuSign have been making a lot of strategic investments into legal technology. They've bought a couple of different tools to build into their kind of marketplace / empire that they're building, because they're a $1.45 billion revenue company right now, which almost makes it one of the biggest legal tech companies in the industry at the moment. So,
well, just on that, there's a note in one of the articles I read that quoted, I think it was one of the VC firms that have joined DocuSign in investing in the legal tech fund, as saying that they see DocuSign as the largest legal tech company.
Right.
But then there's also a note that says, well, that's if you measure it by a certain metric. I can't remember which one it was, but if you measure it by some other metric, it would be Thomson Reuters. So, I think the jury's out. It depends how you measure it. Yeah.
Sure. Good point. Anyway, they're a big player. Everyone knows about them. And like I said, I was reading this article, and they explained that what they've done is set up their own ventures called DocuSign Ventures, but they've also invested into this group, the VC-funded group called the Legal Tech Fund, which is quite interesting. But then I also saw an article a couple of days later, actually it was about a month later, where McDermott, Will & Emery, which is a law firm, announced a $10 million investment into that same fund, which I thought was quite interesting. So now you've got DocuSign investing into this thing called the Legal Tech Fund for an undisclosed amount. I couldn't find exactly how much they would have invested into this group, but now you've got a law firm investing into this group. And I think there was also another small group that put some money into that as well. But now you've got these kind of players all putting money into this VC group to invest into kind of legal tech. So there, I mean, there's some of the points. Ellie, did you have any thoughts before I kind of talked about some of my points?
Well, no, only really that this, I think this signals a significant commitment to investing in legal tech by DocuSign. You know, it's making sort of investments in the space on multiple fronts here. And one thing I'm aware of is that DocuSign has a history of buying the companies it invests in. So this seems to me to be a step in the direction of greater consolidation, which again is something you and I have been speaking about for a long time. And also it shows that, you know, either the biggest player in the market or one of the biggest players in the market sees significant future growth. So yeah, I think it's interesting on many fronts.
Yeah. So I guess some of the other points were that this fund typically focuses on investments between $250,000 and $1 million. So we're kind of focusing on the early stage companies. But McDermott, Will & Emery's contribution to this fund was interesting from my perspective, because I think if you're a law firm to have discretionary money, if we want to call it that, to spend on legal technology or to really spend on anything is probably pretty rare, I would say. And these guys probably had a really good couple of years, and you know, maybe they've got some money laying around they can invest into kind of legal technology, or maybe it was more strategic than that. But I think it's a really smart move, because, you know, instead of thinking they can do everything and trying to build their own technology, move away from their core line of service, which is providing legal advice, to maybe building their own technology, that probably wasn't a smart idea. But also just kind of creating their own direct strategic relationships was probably not the right idea as well. So they've kind of taken, I think, the better route to both invest into this group that will then invest that money smart and also contribute to creating some of the best technology, hopefully, that the industry is going to see in the next couple of years. So I think it's a great move, not only for the firm, but also for the industry generally. So yeah, I think it's a good move for everybody.
Imagine being in the partners meeting at that firm where the suggestion was, instead of taking, you know, some additional amount of drawings from, you know, the partnership capital account, whatever it's called, we're going to put that money into, you know, an investment fund which may return a lot more or may return nothing. And when it does return more, you may not be a partner anymore. So yeah, it does. I think it does show real foresight, and probably that wouldn't have been an easy conversation. So it's an interesting move. I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree. Look, the other trend I'm thinking here is that will people that are looking to create legal technology, is their ultimate goal now to sell to one of these massive funds now? Because you've got DocuSign Ventures, you've got the Legal Tech Fund. There's a bunch of other ones, you know, led out of the US and led out of the UK. And you're seeing these really large companies like Thomson Reuters and DocuSign and whatever, right? Name any kind of company there that are acquiring a lot of these smaller players. So, you know, if you're a person trying to get into a legal technology market, you kind of have two routes: either build the technology at a point solution, focus on a point solution, get it to that best point, and then ultimately sell to one of these big players, or compete with one of these big players. And I mean, if you're a tech company starting now, I mean, what do we talk about some of these companies that just raised $200 million? I think they started in 2014. I think that's where InCouncil was and Entra. So they're doing a Series B, $200 million, started in 2014. So that's a good run. But how long has DocuSign been around for? I don't know. Same as the other ones, like Thomson Reuters, like I said. So is it going to be hard to play, you know, at the small end of town? At the big end of town, and is the small end of town now going to be flooded because this is kind of the avenue in which to make the money? Don't know. I wonder what we'll see.
Well, and as we've been saying all along, are we going to end up in a position where much of the small end has been acquired and we've got a whole lot less small players and a whole lot more platforms, right? And it'll remain to be seen, but I think we've already seen the start of that in my opinion. All right. I think we're pretty much done for today. We've survived without dog barking. So thanks, Coco.
Thanks, Coco.
Okay. Catch you later, Alex.
Thanks, Elliot. Bye.